my first place duck from last year was a lot better.
Same race?
Yeah. Wait, hold on. Grab that duck.
Grab that duck. You grab that duck. Hey everybody, welcome to episode 358 of On the Rocks, the show that pairs video games and other stuff with their perfect drink. This is your host Kyle, and joining me today is my Moogle mounting mate, Dave. No Amy today. Did you think Amy was joining?
Dirty. I did think Amy was joining.
Yeah,
I was not prepared to start this right now.
I know. I did think she just had... She didn't want to be on the episode without anything to say, so, but she's going to join.
Oh, afterwards. Lame. I always join episodes I didn't have anything to say on. I just said things anyway.
I know. I was going to tell her that, but I didn't want to make her feel extra bad. as always, you can email us at podcastotr@gmail.com. If you guys have any ideas for future drink and pop culture pairings, as well as questions, thoughts about our show. I don't know if I said what we're reviewing tonight. Reviewing Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. And by we, woo! I mean me. And before I give you the floor, I'm not even going to ask you what you've been playing because I know you've been playing that. I guess you can ask me because
I've been playing other stuff out personally.
Yeah. I want to start though with just a recommendation. I forget if I've talked about it since I repicked it up, but Spirit Tea finally... like crossed over as far as being a game that I want to keep playing.
Oh, nice.
I don't know if I necessarily.
Like a while there.
Yeah. Yeah. It was just like hanging out for a little while, but there was one moment because you can be friends with people in the town and you talk them up and you can do activities with them, which is fine. And the little meter builds up. And if it builds up enough times, you can actually get them to help you in the bathhouse. And so instead of doing all the work in the bathhouse, as far as heating the fire, cleaning all the towels, doing all that, you can have people do that for you. And so it makes running the bathhouse, which is my favorite part of the game, just way more relaxing, and it's nice. And so I'm just making a lot of money with my four helpers and then putting that money back into the bathhouse and making it bigger and adding more baths, and it's really cool and satisfying and not stressful at all. It's kind of nice. As much as I would really like to talk about Dragon's Dogma 2, I haven't put enough time into it, and me and Amy are both feeling the same thing, where in a world without Helldivers 2, we'd be playing that game a lot more. But I will put time into it eventually. Right now Helldivers 2 is still just taking over. And then I also bought two new indie games that just came out yesterday on Steam. And I'll probably be talking about them in the next week or two because I think they're both pretty short. Saviorless is this hand-drawn action puzzle platformer with a really cool kind of art book look to it, and it's cool. It's not like gonna wow you right away, but I'm enjoying it so far. And I've heard it's just this well-done small game, and apparently it's the first indie game out of Cuba, which is kind of cool. The other one that I got was Minishoot Adventures, which is the other one that I showed you, which is that colorful, cartoony shoot 'em up Metroidvania. One of the things that kind of pushed me over the edge to picking it up, besides that both of these games are really budgeted too. They're like around 10, 15 bucks each, was there's one of the first reviews on Mini Shoot Adventures says that it runs at a solid 60 frames a second on the Steam Deck. And I'm like, that's pretty nice. Even though nice. It's like, it should be a given 20. For a small indie game, but it's not. And so it like I played the demo during a Steam Next Fest a few months ago. And I really enjoyed it and added it to my Steam wish list, and then it came out. So hopefully those nice. Two tag teaming will be a good time. What have you been up to besides Final Fantasy, of course?
After and beating Helldivers. Two things, actually. I've actually been putting a little more time into Fall Guys because we had our episode about our favorite games of all time. And I was
wanted
like,
to make sure you weren't actually.
Was I rash?
Yeah.
I rash on Fall Guys? And then I put a bunch of time into it this morning because I have time off. And I was like, nope. Yeah, this game is really fun, even by myself. Like, weird. So I stand by my decision on that one being like number 10. It's a good time. But as far as new games go, I am playing Prince of Persia: The Lost Crown.
Oh yeah.
Did and
that get its hooks into you yet?
It has. It's actually pretty good. It's not as hooky as like Final Fantasy has been to me, mm-hmm. where it's like I've been, you know, again, I played Fall Guys. Actually, I was playing Dreamcast a little bit there. I was playing some Soul Calibur a little bit last night. And some other things. But yeah, it's a very good Metroidvania. What I like about it the most is the default setting is that like there's no like marker to tell you where you're going. You just kind of like pay attention to the story. But the design of the levels, and before you shake your head, Kyle, too much, I'll get there in a second. The design of the levels kind of funnel you into that stuff. But if you go the wrong way, you can explore like a little while longer before it like it stops you because you need a new ability.
Yeah.
So I really like that. But there is a mode because I turned it on real quick because I got a little lost, and where it will give you like a marker on the map. It's like you got to go here. It's not going to show you the exact route to get there.
Yeah, that's
but
cool.
But it will like show you where to go. So it's like. And the difficulty levels, you play normal, and like you could do it easy, like all the trophies will pop for everything, because I did look it up. But they also do a nice thing, because this game is very combat-focused as well, as long as exploration. You can like change up the damage of your attacks, or like how long you have to parry, things like that. So I made my
like
parry
sliders.
Window slightly...
Yeah.
Yes. Slightly longer, and now the game is like perfect to me.
That's cool.
Like everything else is still like on the normal difficulty setting, and I turned off the waypoint again now that I kind of know where I'm going. Having just a slightly longer parry window is so good for me. The movement's really good. It's a pretty good game. The story's fine.
Yeah.
So far.
I can't remember back in the day what Prince of Persia was really known for as far as like story or combat or graphics. Because I don't really
graphics
remember the stories that much.
Exploration and movement. If you're talking about like the original Prince of Persia.
Prince of Persia, Sands of Time and...
Sands of Time specifically.
And the evil, not the evil within, the something within.
Yeah, the warrior within.
Warrior within. That one was crazy.
That was the second one. There was a third one too. I don't know what that was
called. Two towers or something. The three towers. The two thrones. Two thrones.
Yeah. Return to King.
Yeah.
The Fellowship of the Warrior.
Seriously. I think it was around the same time too.
I mean, it was actually. That's not wrong. I don't actually remember.
Yeah. Ever since I played
through... Yeah, those were a little Metroid scene.
Guacamelee. That game, I feel like, spoiled me as far as Metroidvanias in telling you what ability you need to... at a certain area, because the map was like, I think it was color coded, and so when you got the ground pound and it was blue or something, you knew that the blue spot on the map is where you needed to go next, and that was really helpful, because I've played a few Metroidvanias over the last year or so, and I get annoyed with them occasionally when they don't mark a dead end very clearly, and then I'll find myself going back to that dead end occasionally and like forgetting that it was a dead end for like what kind of dead end it was.
If this game, say on the map, it does not mark a dead end clearly.
If you get to a wall that you need a special power, does it, can you tell that that,
oh yeah, there's like there? A, yes. Yeah. There's like a thing where it's like, oh, clearly I need to interact with this thing. Cause it's like glowing somehow. Yeah. I just don't have the ability yet, so I need to come back. Because
sometimes when you're going through this map, you find five or six different spots where you're like, I need a power for that, need double jump for that, need a something for this. And then you get those powers a couple hours later, and you're like, fuck, I don't know where to go. And it's like, that's what was cool about Dread. Yeah, and
this was
nice about
this, where it's like, it doesn't... Yeah, it doesn't lead you in too many of those spots, but you can get ahead of yourself and like start exploring those areas and get like power-ups to help you with your current spot.
Yeah.
Like more, you know, jewels, because you can upgrade your character and some other shit like that. So,
that's cool.
They don't punish you for missing your turn, as it, like, the turn off, as it were. Like, so if you go ahead, like, you might get, like, an ability before, you know, you're technically supposed to. And it's not going to break the game or anything, like, help you, like, speedrun, or it might, I guess, I don't know. But it will definitely help you, like, if you go, then you have to backtrack and, like, go down and actually do the part. It'll help you during that stuff. It's, I think it's really well designed.
That's cool. Yeah, the idea of it sounded weird, but if you think about it, I mean, that's how the first, kind of how the first Prince of Persia was, like a 2D game. Yeah. So,
yeah.
Yeah, it's cool. 100%. Let's get into, before... Say just the brief like intro to Final Fantasy VII, because I do have a drink pairing.
If you have a drink pairing, but I don't. I mean, sort of, yes. Back when Remake came out and we reviewed this, I came up with the Cosmo Canyon.
Yeah, but for some reason I called it the Cosmo Canyon. Yeah, on our description, I feel like I hope it was just in the episode details that it was a typo, but yeah. So the new drink I was going to come up with was the exact same drink that we were going to make, but you had a pinch of salt.
Yeah.
Because of that cutscene that, I don't know if you saw it in the game in Rebirth, but you talk to a bartender and he makes you that drink.
Yes, absolutely does.
But she suggests adding a pinch of salt to it.
Yes.
So that's why.
That is one of Tifa's little like side quests where you can like up your bond with her.
Yeah.
The Cosmo Canyon would actually work for this game again and be more appropriate. The first game in Remake, Seventh Heaven, Tifa's Bar, is known for making that drink. This game, you actually go to Cosmo Canyon. And she teaches a bartender in a different town how to make it perfectly. So it's like and doubly
does she
great.
Actually, like, there's not a recipe, right?
No, there is. I mean, not in game. You don't see what it is. But she teaches him the recipe, yes.
Yeah, but I mean, like, so there's no canon Cosmo Canyon, you know?
No, I see what you're saying. No.
Okay.
Yes, there is actually. I made it. Listen to the episode, whatever the hell we did for Final Fantasy VII.
I brought up the recipe. It's brutal. As far as like how fucking massive the drink was. So I halved the ingredients for this one because it's 2 ounces of whiskey.
Oh man, I made it for that podcast. I should have done it again.
You were probably schlobber knockered because it was. It was 4 ounces of whiskey. It was 8 ounces of Merlot. And then it was a couple teaspoons of
well, I think I made it. So it was
juice. But yeah, that's like a
When I did it, it was like I was pretending we were all together.
Okay. You're really making a picture or something.
Because it was on the podcast at that point, right?
Maybe. It was 2020. Yeah, he was.
No, it wasn't for one person. It was like. Yeah, I think I said it on the episode. I think that the. Ingredient list was like for 3 to 4 people.
That was like the heart of lockdown too. We were like in it, I think.
Yeah. Well, but it was also like it was like March or actually it was probably the same time frame as this. It was probably April that we reviewed it. Cause it did come out at the it end came of out in March, April. Did it come out in April?
I think it came out in April.
I
think
I remember it's I got it for my brother's birthday. Yeah. And I had to give it to him later because his birthday is beginning in March.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think at that point we were still like, oh yeah, it'll be done in like May, you know, we'll be back, you know, whatever. Mm. And so I think I made the original one thinking that like there's a possibility we would all be seeing each other. And that's where the ingredient tier list came from.
Yeah. But basically,
I think I did make the entire thing and then I just saved some for like the next day and all that.
It's like a 12-ounce cocktail that's wine and whiskey.
So do I have that?
And it's like, ugh. Sounds a lot, like a lot. Because when she makes it in the bar, it's probably like a 3 or 4 ounce.
Yeah, it's not martini. A big thing. Yep, there it is.
Yeah, so what is Final Fantasy VII Rebirth?
Oh, hey, Kyle. Final Fantasy VII Rebirth is the sequel to Final Fantasy VII Remake, which is the reboot/remake of Final Fantasy VII by Squaresoft. Some might say the greatest RPG of all time, and maybe in a top 10 game list of all time for some people.
Yeah, episode 357.
To be honest, I'm actually not just joking around, but it's definitely like a lot of people's like favorite RPGs of all time. Mm-hmm. So this does follow the remake of Final Fantasy VII. Where in 2020 came out, that game, you actually stood entirely in Midgar. I'm going to do a quick story recap of that. It's that first remake doesn't even cover the entirety of the first disc of Final Fantasy VII original.
Mm-hmm.
You get out of Midgar, which is like only a couple hours into Final Fantasy VII original. In the remake, it's like 60 hours. So VII Rebirth covers a lot more than that, because you're out of Midgar, a lot more things happen, covers the rest of the first disc, some of the second, I would say, from the original game. And it adds a lot more character moments and other story elements. But if you did play that first remake game, the combat will feel very familiar. It's not a turn-based combat type game. It is more action-focused. You control one character at a time. AI controls your other two party members. But you can give them commands via menu, or you can switch to them to take a direct control, but then your current lead party member then becomes AI battler. There are some nice additions to the combat. They do some more... quality of life features, like you can hold L1 and hit square to do like certain moves, or R1 square to do other moves, like things like that. They simplified / in a way expanded the character upgrade system, and also the materia system. They kind of simplified that a little bit more too. It's everything that I wanted a sequel to the original remake to be.
Mm-hmm. And it's a planned trilogy, right? So I've heard
it is a planned trilogy.
Okay, cool.
That's why I'm saying like the original Final Fantasy VII, this game encompasses the rest of disc one and then a little bit of disc two, where I assume the final, and there'll probably be just some DLC because they did some DLC for the original remake. I assume there'll be DLC for this, and that'll encompass more. And then the final game will be the rest of the game. But they do make some changes to the storyline of Final Fantasy, as Remake kind of showed. At the end of Remake, Cloud and Party actually break Fate, and thus, if you read between the lines, player expectation, which signifies that Square is going to take this remake trilogy in different directions than the original game followed, story-wise. I mean, also combat-wise and other stuff. And VII Rebirth does do that. And I'm not going to be too spoilery. but they do some events out of order. They expand a lot about like individual character moments. And then my favorite thing actually is they do a lot with Tifa and Aerith becoming friends. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of character moments between them two specifically, which is real good. And they make Yuffie, who was like a throwaway character that you could actually miss in the original Final Fantasy VII, into a fully fledged character who I think has some really good moments as well.
Yeah. I also heard she's really good in combat, maybe.
She is so good in combat. I wasn't using her, and then I like the game is actually really good about forcing you into segments where like it mixes up your party members and you can't use certain members, so you are like forced to use every member of your group at one point or another, which is nice because then you get to like experience how they play and like what their strengths and weaknesses are. It makes you think. And that's when I wasn't using Yuffie at first at all because I didn't like her in the original Final Fantasy VII. But playing her in this, I was like, oh shit, yeah, this is like, she is like legit maybe the best character in the game, like yeah. combat wise.
That's awesome. So I guess one of the first things I wanted to ask was, will this hook non-Final Fantasy fans, or do you think it's still a game that's pretty much tailored towards people that are
connection with these characters as
you do through the years of as playing I do it. Yeah.
Or other
yeah
yes and no. I don't think you need to play the original Final Fantasy VII to necessarily get hooked on it, but I do think you should play the remake. But even then, they actually do at the beginning of the game, they have a really actually pretty good catch-up video, like detailing the events and everything of the remake. And I think this game is good enough where if you didn't play remake or the original, which is insane to me, not playing either one at the very least, and you just started with this one, yeah. I think you'd actually be in a really good spot. There's a lot of growth and development, and there's a lot of story that happens in this that you're not to say you wouldn't be missing too much by not doing those moments, but the game does a very good job of catching you up on what you may have missed. There are flashbacks.
So those extra moments between Aerith and Yuffie, those aren't optional. They're like, they're given to you.
They're a part of the game.
That's good. Cause I like, I know there's a lot of like side quests and stuff.
Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say it's not all in the side quests or anything, but a lot of them are actually just main story.
Yeah.
And it's awesome. It is really cool what they do with those characters.
Yeah. I think I'm slowly starting to become more intimidated with open world games that try to say that they have really good stories because of how so many of these places will say the side quests are the best part of this game, meaning that like there's a really good chance you could miss it and stuff like that. And I've never
Skyrim.
Yeah,
that's the side quests are the best part of the game.
Okay, because I was going to ask if the main story is what actually carries the game through, or is it the side 100%. Quests that are okay? That's cool.
No, it's 100% the story. There are good side quests. I don't mean to demean them either, but no, the story is where it's at, man.
Okay,
it goes from like serious, like goofy, to like deadly serious, like great character moments. I got emotional a few times, which hasn't happened in a long time playing a video game, honestly. They go through some shit.
Mm-hmm.
And they grow as a team. I'm going to talk about the story a lot, just generally, though, because, again, I don't want to spoil too much, especially if you might play it, which I think you absolutely should. Tragedy happens and like they have to deal with it and the characters actually develop.
Is it unexpected tragedy that you haven't seen before?
No, if you played the original Final Fantasy VII, there's a lot of those tragedies you know to expect. But they show them in new lights. They present it in new ways.
I've heard the main tragedy is not as powerful. People do have a lot of nostalgia glasses for that scene specifically.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was the first time a video game made me cry.
Yeah.
So remember what I was telling you off air at some point, like last week, 2 weeks ago, where I heard the ending
was
controversial.
Yeah.
That's why I'm trying to talk around this, because they both.
Oh, because they bring her back or something, right? Yeah. Like she's like not dead.
Or yes. She's like and partially. No.
She's in a different form or something. She's transcended.
That's what happens with Final Fantasy VII. She is actually part of the live stream. Okay. But no, in this, it's different. Oh. So
do they fumble the
third
ending,
game? Then? I think slightly. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
But I think that it's only fumbled in the sense that, like, this is the second game of the trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
And this ending is going to very much feed into the third game. And so once that comes out and you can kind of judge it as a whole,
yeah,
it's not going to be fumbled anymore, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I've heard the Zack character is kind of weirdly used. I kind of skimmed through Skillip's talk about it, but he made it sound like Zack is going to be a big part of the third act. So how they treated him in this was a little strange. But I don't know. It could be the exact same argument where
it's hard to say for me saying it or seeing it.
But like it could be the same thing you were talking about, where once the third one comes out, it'll be like, man, this thing with Zack that they like that seemed weird. It's weird for a reason because of what he does in the third game. But I don't know.
Yes. I think it feels, and I could be reading too much into this, buyer beware, but it does feel like it's authored in a very intentional way.
Mm-hmm.
Like it is a bit weird in this game, but I think it's just because it is a lot of setup for what's going to come next.
Yeah.
And the ending, I don't want to spoil anything, so I'm trying not to like say too much. Alludes to that fact. I don't know how to say it. It's weird because this game is like, a lot of people were mad that remake Final Fantasy VII Remake didn't strictly adhere to Final Fantasy VII Original. And this
are you talking about the timeline thing?
Sort of. Yes, I'm talking about the timeline thing.
Yeah, like this one actually does a lot more spoil crap out of it for me. But then I don't care about the story. Like,
Dude, there's multiple timelines at the end of Remake. It seems like them defeating Fate only makes like two separate timelines. One so where it's the original game, and then there's not enough multiverse stuff out there. And now there's probably at least four timelines.
Yeah,
and part of the ending is that it seems like Rebirth timeline, and this is my headcanon for this, the Rebirth timeline, Aerith, has gotten the all-important white materia from original Final Fantasy VII timeline, Aerith.
So
the Sephiroth in the Rebirth timeline doesn't want to just like destroy the world and then like go destroy other worlds. He basically wants to become a god that will rule over all of time and eternity. Because he's not the Sephiroth from the Rebirth timeline. He's actually a defeated Sephiroth from the original Final Fantasy VII timeline who's discovered multiple realities. So you get help from your Aerith in this timeline, but you also get help from the Aerith in the original timeline, who recognizes that in order to defeat Sephiroth, she actually kind of needs to fuck over her own timeline to help your timeline to actually defeat him for good. It's insane.
And this all takes place in the game, like cutscenes and stuff. Like, is there like a poly
it's vague.
Aerith and like low, like low quality.
No,
like
I wish that'd be amazing. But so there are multiple mini Aeriths. Games where you get like
I did see those. So is it like that? Was it a Sonic game? Whether there was like cartoon Sonic and old Sonic school generations. Sonic, yeah, where mm-hmm. there's like multiple Sonics mm-hmm. being alongside each other, and that's
yes, interesting. And that's but actually right. I
feel like that's another Final thing Fantasy that's
7's, whatever they're called, third one's going to be.
Like I feel like that's what Final Fantasy 7 Generations, where it's like. I know this is for Final Fantasy VII players. There's a part of me that wishes it could be like for more than just Final Fantasy VII players. Yeah.
The part where I'm like digging deep into this is because I'm a Final Fantasy VII player.
Mm.
The overarching story though, like, is still easy enough to follow. Where if you just want to play like the new generation of games, like, and again, I would highly recommend starting with Remake, but mm-hmm. even if you started here, you could follow the story.
Yeah.
For the most part. I think there's just more, if you played Original and then Remake and then have been really paying attention to the story and not everything else, putting together clues a bit, there's a upper level of it where it's like, this is kind of the overarching. And, mm-hmm. I mean, and they do like make those same. They make some of that clear to just. Well, honestly, that would be to you while you play the game.
Yeah,
but there's like, more to it if you've been playing it since 97. Yeah. Honestly,
like I'm not gonna be the guy who screams at the TV when I finally get control of Sephiroth for like a side mission, but I can see it being a big moment.
It's awesome.
Yeah, it seems like it's a lot of fan service in a good way, but also in a
there is, but it's yeah. also, it's also a lot of like not fan service. Yeah.
How is the open world?
I mean,
because I've seen a lot of different takes on it, whether it's the best open world in all video games or is the game overall bloated because
they're just
making the game they're stretching a shorter story into a lot more of a game. You're probably like my brother, though, where he sits down and watches a four-hour movie, and he's like, I could have watched that movie for another 5 hours. Because you're like, No one normal would say that.
No, I can see where... strike that reverse.
Because you also said the side quests weren't very good.
The best open world. It is not the best open world there ever was, or anything like that. I think that's pretty ridiculous to say, honestly. Yeah. But I think it's very good.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see where people say it's bloated. But my counterpoint to that is, I think actually all the things that they ask you to do are fun. It is fun to explore and kind of find the things. And they throw so many minigames at you. It, like, every chapter has a different, like, minigame. So it's, like, not all the same shit. And
How many of them are actually good, though?
Better.
Yeah.
Most of them. Actually, I think most of them. But there are some that are better than others. There was one that I actually really pretty hated. But again, you don't really have to do it.
Yeah.
Like, actually, there's two that I really did.
I feel like that's isn't that the definition of bloat? Or maybe
well, no, I don't think so. Because you don't have to do them to see
all
the game.
Yeah.
Or all the story. But there are side stories and stuff that you can see by doing that stuff.
Yeah.
Character moments and things like that. But even then, like, you don't have to win them to continue on. You just have to get, like, third place, which they make ridiculously easy.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then if you want to, like, get first place and all that kind of stuff, you keep on going, and there's, like, more races, and they give you the opportunity to do more of it. Just because they're fun, but you don't have to.
I think
there's a side quest. Go ahead first.
I was gonna say I think the biggest open world game that I finished was Assassin's Creed Odyssey, and I remember that game doing like really horrible gating where you're ready, like you're not ready yet to play this mission because you're not the right level or you didn't do the right thing first. I feel like I did hear that there's something in here where there's like you have to do something in order to unlock a new materia or something.
If you do some of the side quests, you'll get new materia, but you don't have to do that to go further.
Okay.
Nope.
That's nice.
No, if you just want to mainline the game, just play the story, you absolutely can. Yeah. If you want to do the side quests, you'll get better weapons, you'll get access to better materia.
Mm-hmm.
But that does not stop you at all. And even then, sometimes the materia is not even better. It's just like
different
this
options.
Lightning materia that you get now is rank 3 instead of like getting it regular to rank 1, you know, or whatever. None of it is mandatory.
That's cool.
They do make you like try it real quick. Like, because they put it in there. So you do have to, like, try, like, once, usually.
Oh, crap. Do I have to play a game of Queen's Blood? Because I saw that, and I was like, this is definitely not going to be for me.
You do, but you can just, like, either play it. Well, they do make you, like, do it once, because they give you, like, tutorial. Yeah. So, like, a lot of these games, like, they give you the tutorial thing, so they make it easy. You can kind of just do it. Then you never have to interact with it again. Mm-hmm. So, yes, but no. Also, I did all the Queen's Blood matches. I made a killer fucking deck.
Yeah.
Actually, one of my biggest. I'm gonna skip over this whole thing real quick. A lot of the side quests come with their own quest lines. So like they give you story reasons. And it's usually a character story reasons just to kind of continue on with them and do them all, which I really appreciate. But I think they're actually really well designed. They're pretty fun for the most part, so I do them anyways. But Queen's Blood has its own story, and I actually really enjoyed it. But the final battle, the final character cheats, and so you have to like design a deck to counteract how that character cheats. Mm-hmm. And so if you haven't been collecting cards, you might get fucked.
Yeah,
and that actually made me mad. I did not enjoy that. That pissed me off a lot. Because that's I think awesome. Queen's Blood is actually real awesome. Super fun minigame. Huh. I got all the cards. I went through it. There's no achievement for it. There's no trophy.
That's funny.
I was just like, I want to see this through because I want to be the best.
I'm surprised there's not
and I had a great time
trophy
doing it.
For that. That's crazy.
Me too! It's so good! If they come out with a Queen's Blood like standalone game, I will be here for it.
Yeah.
I'd put some money
I wouldn't
on that,
be surprised.
Probably. I wouldn't either. It seems like it's something right up their alley. But yeah, like all the quests are pretty well designed. I think, again, like I said, there's a few that are not, but like every single chapter, they're introducing a new side quest, mini game, activity. And I can see how people would attribute that to bloat, but all of it is optional.
Bloat or is it overwhelming like with map markers and
no,
activities and side quests board or anything? Yeah. That's nice.
After you.
I was gonna ask what is the worst part of the game, but you can get into other stuff first if you want. What was your least favorite thing in the game?
My least favorite thing in the game was the queen cheating
Queen's
Blood.
Yeah.
The final battle net. God, that pissed me off. It took me like 2 hours to figure out like
how long are battles usually?
5 minutes.
Jesus.
Yeah, I had to play it so many times, Kyle. Many times.
Ugh.
Gosh, the worst part. I think some of the writing is a little cheesy, and that's just the style of the game, you know, and where it's written from. And that bothers me. Man, other than that, it's like minor nitpicks.
Mm-hmm.
I told you you don't have to actually like indulge in any of those side quests or mini games. I think with that being said, Weirdly enough, I think there are too many of them at the same time, because I kind of, it's like, I'm not sure how, that too many is the wrong way of putting it. Let me look at my notes. 1 second. How do I have this? Where's my notes? Oh, did I put it on the iPad? I don't know if I'll touch it.
Don't touch it.
Okay, no, I know what I want to say. This is a trophy hunter problem.
Oh yeah.
Once you beat the mini games, they get like expert versions, and you have to beat those versions, and I think those are less fun. But that's only to get the trophies if you want to beat like the entire game and get a platinum.
Oh yeah, no.
Again, you don't have to nitpick. Entire nitpick.
Yeah.
Are
the battling and the combat still good?
I think
are there random yes. encounters still or no, nope. There aren't any.
Well, random in the sense you will see all enemies. You can go up and engage them first. It's actually kind of like Chrono Trigger, where you can get the advantage if you hit the action button at the right time. So you can get like first strike, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So there's no random battles anymore, which is really nice. The final boss is a son of a bitch and a half, but I think it's actually really well designed.
I've heard bosses, at least from one source,
but it's like a good hard.
Where the bosses are a little spongy. Like that was one of our complaints of that one Evil West game, where the fights aren't really that interesting.
They're just.
It takes a long time to kill the boss, which I don't know if I like that as a.
No, they're. I can see where, I can see where the sponginess aspect would come into this game. But I think those people who think they're spongy are not
doing the side quests. And
you can analyze any enemy in the game and see what the weaknesses are and like how to pressure them.
Yeah.
And that like make them vulnerable. So if you're not doing that, then they're spongy. But if you're actually like playing the game kind of how it's intended, it's not spongy at all.
And I'm assuming it's not a type of RPG where you can break it, where like in Elden Ring, people are making these builds where you can one shot the final boss or something like crazy. Can you do that in a game like this? I've heard about an exploding Yuffie or something. Like
that. Yes. But there are ways you can kind of do it.
Yeah.
There's a material where it will switch your health and magicka.
Mm-hmm.
So you can have like, so normal magicka would be like, I don't know, it's like 89. And your health is like in the 3000s.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so you can just switch them and then unload.
And then you can also, there's another material where it does that same thing for like, it also, like attack and magic or something. So you can make your magic attack really high. And so my Aerith at the end of the game had 120 something health, but I had her equipped with all kinds of magic, like offensive magic and healing, and she was also able to auto use magic, so she was just spamming the fuck out of some magic and blowing people the fuck up.
Nice.
And it was amazing. That's cool. it's you can kind of break it, but it's not as like breakable as Elden Ring in that regard, or maybe Skyrim. But they do let you do some fun things with it.
That's cool.
Go ahead real quick.
I'm pretty much done with all my questions and stuff. With the combat in the first game, the whole combination of tactical and action game, it took me a little while, maybe even like a couple hours to really get into what I was doing. Did they do anything to really change it up besides make it maybe even more complex?
I can't imagine
they made it any like easier.
No, I think they streamlined it a bit more. I think it is a little easier. But no, I mean, it's basically the same combat system. Because
It's like, it's not really a tactical game where you're not pausing time and moving your pawns and like strategizing real.
Oh, but you are. If you go into the menu, you can pause time and strategize.
No one does that.
You can get deep with it.
No one does it though. But it's like, so it's not that, but then it's also not the most precise, weighty, action game combat either.
No, you can dodge out of things. Like, you can cancel out your moves. Like,
yeah,
it's not Elden Ring in that regard where you're just stuck into move sets. The things I want to talk about, since I transferred my notes now, dude, the game looks amazing.
Mm-hmm. I forgot that the first one was PS4.
PS4?
Yeah.
And what, like, what a way. That and Last of Us 2,
mm-hmm.
great games go out? To just kind of sunset the PS4.
Mm-hmm. So
and I guess
good looking that you forget that they didn't come out on PS4.
Really great games. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Especially now that all three of them have PS5 versions. But yeah, the game still looks really good. One minor complaint is some of the lighting actually is a little wonky. And the performance mode looks a little blurry when compared to like the graphics mode. But I'd rather play in performance mode and get that 60 frames per second because this game feels really good when playing it like that. I know I talked about the music in Final Fantasy VII Remake, but the music in this one is even better. They took all of the classic themes from Final Fantasy VII and updated every single song, added a couple more new ones even, mm-hmm. and then remixed a bunch of them. And this might be my favorite video game soundtrack of all time.
Nice. Is it on Spotify or
I've been listening
or other?
I don't know if it's platforms. On Spotify. It's not on Pandora, I can tell you that. Mm. But I found it on YouTube. You can find cool. all the music
yeah,
on YouTube.
Yeah, YouTube's good for that.
And I've been listening to it on YouTube, and I've been listening to it a lot on YouTube. They took what was already an all-timer of a soundtrack and literally made it even better in pretty much every single way. Like, I can't think of a single negative to say about the soundtrack at all.
Yeah.
Which, actually, one negative thing that is a minor negative, but Kyle, if you decide to play this game, and anybody who decides to play this game, I recommend going to the settings and actually futzing around with the sound sliders.
Also, you turn your party chatter down?
No, I turn the party chatter up and the talking up, because whatever mix they have, at least when I first started this, the music and sound effects are too loud. And I was missing some of the dialogue there for a minute.
Weird. And
so like, I put everything down to like 6 or 7. I think sound effects to 6, music to 7, and like speech up to 10. Mm-hmm. And that got me the mix where it was like actually good. Because the sound effects and music were still very loud at Crazy. That point. But it wasn't overshadowing the conversation. So yeah, a weird mix. So that's a little bit of a negative, but again, like a...
And that was just through your speakers? You didn't have a headset on or anything?
No, yeah, that was through my... it doesn't give you an option to choose like between home speaker setup and like 5.1 or headset, which is weird. But yeah, no, that was a universal setting.
Okay.
So whether I was using my headset or my speakers, it was off. It was wonky.
Yeah.
But yeah, but other than that, though, I think all the voice acting is top-notch. They really get some good voice actors in there. They have a lot of great character moments. I cannot recommend this game enough. You get, with the story, with all the minigames, with the fun combat, with the side quests, great music, graphics, you really get $70 worth of game.
Yeah, I was going to say...
And more.
There's been a lot of AAA games to come out in the last year or so where there's issues running or they're short or they're broken or stuff like that. But this sounds like it's the full package. Doesn't really
stumble
at all.
I think the only thing they can do now at this point is add DLC and maybe just do a little bit of a tune-up with the performance mode so it's just the graphics are slightly better while you're at 60 frames. And this thing is like, it's the whole deal, man.
And fix the ending a little bit. Like, is there a possibility that the third one's just going to be like a batshit crazy complete? Like, is there a potential for the third one to actually be pretty different and potentially bad?
Yes.
Because like this one sounds like the changes are becoming greater. The path is splitting off from the original more and more as they go, right?
Like story wise?
Yeah, yeah. Like literally, I mean, I know they're literally splitting, yes, but like,
yes.
And so I think the third one would actually be the one that I would be crazy for because of how, I don't know, different it would be, but I don't know. That's just
I think
because I can also see honestly, people the trying to tiptoe when we're talking about remakes and stuff between keeping the original and how and its integrity while also updating it and making it better is a really crazy line, and I feel like this trilogy is going to be something talked about for a very, very long time with how to do it really well. But the more they go on, it sounds like they're potentially risking something kind of intense. I don't know.
I think they're actually going to take it pretty close to what the original game was. It'll follow that storyline mostly.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a feeling there's one... Oh, fuck it. I think the entire multiverse is going to come and you're going to have a multiverse battle against God Sephiroth, basically. I think that's how that game's going to end.
Yeah. That'd be cool if it would be like, what was it, the Shadow of War, Shadow of Mordor, where you like recruit your like soldiers and you actually get like a... Is there like a big war in the Final Fantasy VII, or is it more just like a big...
They're making a book thing of the war with Shinra against Wutai, which was alluded to in the original game but never expounded upon, which the remake and now especially Rebirth have really expanded on, which I'm really enjoying. I have a feeling that like you can't really recruit like Otherworld like Cloud or something, but I think you're gonna get Zack for more of the game. I think you might get some other characters from Avalanche as well that you played as in Remake for a few bits.
That'd be cool. The big guy. I forget what his fate was. He didn't die in Remake, did he? Oh no.
Just no.
I forget. Like I remember
Thanks, Wes and Jesse.
I remember finishing that game like in a fever dream because it was one of those fake endings where they're like, I thought it ended, and then there's still like a couple more hours left. So I just was like, fuck it, I guess I'll beat it tonight.
I'm going tonight.
Awesome.
Yeah, dude, I cannot recommend it enough.
You should bring it
up. It'll be hard pressed for me to not find another game of the year for this, though Helldivers
Yeah.
It is making a pretty good run for its money,
comparing those two is it's like, I don't know, Final Fantasy is good. I mean, maybe it'll get better if you think about it more, but it is just a its own contained thing. I feel like Helldivers has the potential to fuck itself over and also has the potential to do something. Like maybe it'll be the next Fall Guys because of how Fall Guys when the first iteration of Fall Guys was fine, but it's very different from what it used to be.
Yeah, and I don't see Helldivers doing that exactly, but
you don't think Helldivers changing?
Has the potential to to change itself as much as Fall Guys has.
I don't think Fall Guys has changed itself, but not as much.
Real quick.
Oh, let's end this. Okay. That'll do it for episode 358 of On the Rocks. Make sure to follow us on Facebook at On the Rocks, also on iTunes at On the Rocks Podcast. And next week we're gonna do some demos. I'm gonna talk about some demos.
Okay.
I wanna talk about demos. And Amy will be back.
Sounds like a plan.
And this is Kyle.
This is Dave. And we're on the rocks.
And signing off.
And pew, pew, pew. Pew, pew, signing off.